The title of this message is Needy People. Needy People. I think in the area of religion, religious people, regardless of faith or belief, you will find more needy people in the arena of religion than any other place on the face of the earth. Part of that neediness, of course, is legitimate. And I'll talk about that in just a few minutes. But there's another side of that neediness, the negative side that I want to talk about today, that can be very destructive, that can stunt growth, Christian growth, can really just mess you up in the area of neediness, emotional neediness, one area. And so I want to talk about that negative effects of being a needy person. I think if you were to interview a multi-million-dollar corporation, and let's say they employed 5,000 people, and if you were to interview the 5,000 people, you'd find a far less needy people among that big corporation than you would if you interviewed a church of 5,000 people. In the church, you'd find a lot of needy people. Sometimes people are turned off by the neediness of religious people. Just the regular Joe out there on the street can be very turned off by the neediness of us religious people. For example, let's say you've got this Christian and he's thinking, he's praying to God, Lord, should I buy this new car? I'm thinking about buying this new car, $20,000, what is your will? And then if you have this, let's say, successful businessman who knows how to manage his money, knows how to handle finances, knows how to take the risks, you know, knows how to handle his money. He's going to be appalled by a person that has to consult, you know, God on this. He's going to look at it as a needy person. One, because he has a lot of experience in that area, obviously. Now, much of our neediness in the beginning stages of a Christian is legitimate, what I call legitimate need. After all, when God calls an individual, we are babes in Christ. And we need much from God. We need forgiveness. We need grace. We need mercy. We need God's help in so many ways, desperately. So I would say, as a child of God, when God gives you a conviction, when God calls you, you really are, we all are, very extremely needy individuals. And I think I would use the example here of a baby. There is nothing more helpless than a human, you know, baby. Just absolutely. You've got to do anything. You've got to hold them up. You've got to feed them. You've got to nurture them. They are helpless compared to some of the animal kingdom where, let's say, a little deer within just a very short time, all it's up on his feet, walking around. But human beings, when we are born, we're needy. But there is maturity as the human being as we grow up. And there's such a thing as you know, human, the individual must mature. You eventually mature into a teenager. You eventually mature into adulthood, and you eventually leave home. You leave your father and your mother, and you cleave into your wife, and it's part of all that is part. You know, leaving can be a painful process to the parents and sometimes to the child. But it is obviously that maturity is something that we all must strive for. Or towards. So much of our Christian needs are legitimate indeed. So I'd like to read you a couple of stories about some needy individuals. This is from a book entitled James Dobson. It's got only two stories, and both of them are women, and I'm not trying to pick on women here, but this is the example, and there are lessons here for us to learn. This book entitled One Must Be Tough. This is a woman. Her name is Faye. As we go through this story, I want you to listen to what is leading us in this individual's life. And what I'm going to try to achieve here is the problem with being so needy in a Christian's life. And, Dr. Dobson, I'm writing you regarding my marriage. My husband gave me the bad news earlier this year, telling me he no longer loved me. He told me he was planning to leave soon. But I begged and begged with him to stay with me. He did for a while. Then one night, he became so cruel and said many things before walking out. Ever since he left, for some odd reason, I humiliate myself every time I see him. I beg him to call the kids and me. He says, I don't want to talk to you. I tell him how much I love him. And he replied, I have no love for you. I don't hate you, but I don't love you either. That hurts me so much. I've asked Joe to see a counselor, but he said he doesn't need any help from either one. He doesn't even care about the marriage. He only wants his freedom. He says he wants to go to Pennsylvania where he can get a better job in the mining business. So what do you think the problem is? She asked. We've been married 11 years, and we have two beautiful children. The odd thing is that we never did fight or argue very much. It just seems that he slowly turned against me and changed his mind about being my husband. Have you ever seen such a case as this? Now something awful has happened. I went to the doctor recently, and he told me I'm going to have surgery on my eyes and I can lose my vision. I'll be going to the hospital next week. I just couldn't help it, Dr. Dobson. I broke down and called my husband again. And he was indifferent to the news. He quietly asked me if I had made arrangements with the kids and if I had someone to take me to the hospital. I asked if he would take me and then stay in the waiting room while I had surgery. So I hesitated and then said, well, I guess so. What must I do to get Joe's nerve again? He has told me over and over that nothing can make him care for me like before. I have cried and begged him to come home. I've told him how badly we need him. I've tried being nice. That doesn't help either. I've told him I'm afraid and I need him especially now. And he says, I'm sorry, the timing is bad. It is likely that we would end up in a divorce. Joe has asked for one, but I refuse. I still have hope that we can get back together. I told him that, and he said, can't you get it through your head that I'll never love you again? We used to do everything together, but now it's all over. I keep calling my husband because if I don't, he would never call me. Next Monday is a holiday, and he didn't ask what the kids and I were doing, so I asked if he would spend the day with us. The ethic's so smart, and said, if I had nothing else to do, should I ignore him? If I do, I'll never see him again. Please help me. Tell me what to do. I love Joe so much. Several things I want to draw from this example, on this first story. Because we have just read about an extremely needy individual. Number one is that needy people are extremely appalling to others. One of the things that is sending Joe away is her neediness. Point number one, needy people can be extremely appalling to others. Needy people actually drive people away from them. Needy people, because of their needs, they actually are like a magnet in reverse, it pushes people away. People, when you come out, they scatter. Third thing is that needy people can be extremely people pleasers. As an example, which is, I'll do anything to make you love me. Please come back. I'll do anything to make you love me. And I think in a lot of cases, needy people, that our needs can be so great that it corrupts our good judgment. But it's as if our needs can blind us to where it corrupts good, common sense, judgment. You know, that's what Dobson's advice is to this woman. it's a funny one. It's because I can put it in all terms of, without, it's tell that guy, bring him freedom. Freedom. Now, I've used that. I think, you know, it's true that you know, men, sometimes women's needs are more exposed. Men have the same kind of needs. Men can be just as needy as women. We're both in the same boat here, but men have a tendency to hide their neediness. They hide it. They hide behind a facade or maybe macho man, and yet I'm just one man that's really hurting. They hide it behind alcohol, drugs. We hide our needs. Some women hide their needs. I know women who have been through hell. And yet you never end up talking to them. In a relationship, they've been through heartache. And yet you never know. They hide those needs. So men and women, we can hide our needs. You know, just using this example, many women's needs are more exposed. Now, in a healthy relationship, you have freedom of choice. Someone said that a woman needs to know from a gut feeling, from a gut level, that she can make it on her own. Emotionally, she can make it on her own. From a gut, you know that, from a gut level. It's critical. Because there's two phrases here. One is destructive. It is, I love you so much because I need you so badly. Oh, I just need you so badly. That's why I love you so much. That's destructive. That's appeasement. Desperation. The other is, I love you. Therefore, I need you. I love you. That's a decision. Freedom of choice. I love you. Therefore, I need you. And it is critical to know that, for the man also to know that he can make it on his own. I think death, not that death is ever easy to take, but death is much harder if it's built on a needy relationship. Well, if something ever happens, I just couldn't make it on my own. So, you know, please, if anything ever happened, I just wouldn't be able to make it. That needy death would be tougher. Whether you're talking about death of a mate or death of a parent. It's going to be tougher if it's built on a needy relationship. I see all around me examples of neediness. And I think about maybe the woman in her 30s still had a garbage permit. You know, that's my advice would be get a life. that's neediness. That's depending on God's will for everything. Neediness. It can be dangerous. Characteristic of a needy person. I think a little puppy dog. Always following you around, you know, this little puppy. You can't get away from this puppy dog. Everywhere you go, there's this little puppy dog at your feet. Or maybe a cat. Cats are neat. They drive me crazy. You know, cats. They always want you to rub them. I had a cat one day. I walked to the mailbox. I'm taking steps like this. And that cat was zigzagging between my legs, trying to get a rub off each leg. It was shoo, shoo, shoo. And I think, oh, I just moved. Just pulling it around me, you know. And that neediness just gets under my skin. And as it talks about, the woman one time, we come by the car, and she just wanted to sit and talk. Just sit and talk. I just need you to sit here crawling, and let's talk. And Angela said, they basically got to the point where she just had to get up and say, look, you don't have to talk. You don't have to follow me. You know, we're going to work. We're going to have a horse. We're going to have a button or whatever. You just have to stay up with me if you want to communicate. Neediness. You know, needy people. Needy people are ones that have the rubber bands at home and they go around the phone number. You know, I think I'll call old Joe. Joe, how are you doing? Not doing anything. How are you doing, Joe? Can I help you? No, I'm just coming in. So you know, I figure out I'm bothering old Joe, so I go down the rubber band, so I call another person. Joe, how are you doing? How can I help you? Just call him. I'm needy. You know, there are a lot of people who are needy. Are lonely people. I understand that. They are lonely people, and they have but a lot of needy people have a lot of time on their hands. Too much, you know. Idle hands is a devil's workshop. Entirely too much time on their hands. And if you could get them busy, they wouldn't be needy. Women needy people call the church asking for money, and they're always desperate. That's what hurts me so bad. You know, and the pastor, That's crazy. Needy people. And I think about how I feel about needy people. It's like they've got red lights on their head. I can attack a needy person in 5 minutes. It's just like they're just screaming. I need you. And my behavior is to run like a devil in the opposite direction. It irks me. It just gets under my skin. Seem to work right. They seem to be unhappy people, needy people. Several characteristics about needy people. Needy people find it hard to come to a disclosure on anything. Now, if you think about this, it don't make sense. You know, I am so needy that I'm never able to come to a disclosure on anything. My weakness prevents me from coming to a disclosure. I know people that are still trying to prove the truth about the Sabbath day. They're in church 3 years. Still trying to prove the truth about the holy days. Should I keep them or not? 20 years of it. Their neediness prevents them from coming to a disclosure or anything. They just never come to the revelation where, yes, and needy people will, they're the religious hobbyists. They search, looking. And you know, after you've searched for so long, confusion sets in. Satan now puts his hand on your back and deceives you, and you're basically out. You're gone away with him. You know, he has his way. But many people, one of the characteristics is that they find it hard to come to a disclosure on anything. The problem with being so needy, if I could illustrate this, maybe the sin factor of being so needy is there's always a hidden agenda or motive that the needy person is working for. You can't be the need for attention. And all my energy and focus goes on my need for attention. It can be the need for love. And all my energy and focus goes in my need for love. And these are the little gods that we serve. It's sort of like a form of idolatry, all the little gods that we serve. Whether it's the need for attention or a need for love, whatever it may be. There's a verse in Philippians 4 and verse 19. You know what I'm talking about? It's just a simple statement. It says, well, let's turn that on. I have written that on my life. Philippians 4 verse 19. Philippians 4 verse 19. Paul is talking about financial aid that he had received from the church. But he just makes this statement that I think is interesting. Philippians 4 verse 19 says, but my God shall supply all your need according to his riches in glory by Christ Jesus. They'll supply all my needs. And I think if God will supply all my needs, and I believe that God will supply all my needs, then why am I so needy? Why should I be all? I mean, it is a sign of maturity that the Christian babe grows up, and the more they grow, the less needy they become. Just like a little babe that begins to grow, you become less and less and less needy. That's a sign of maturity. A Christian's life. Now, how does God feel about needy people? This is what I get home maybe as I was thinking about my own feelings toward needy people. How I avoid and run from needy people. You see them coming down the street, you turn around, and zoop, away. Avoidance. And I thought, wait a minute, God, if I feel like that toward needy people, how does God feel about needy people? About this. Well, how does God love my neediness? Does it turn him on? Am I always so needy? I don't think so. Let me use my illustration here. Isaiah 59 verse 1. Isaiah 59 verse 1. Because behold, the Lord's hand is not shortened, that he cannot save, neither is ear heavy that he cannot hear. But your sins have separated between you and your God. Your iniquities have separated between you and your God. And your sins have hid his face from you, that he will not hear. God is amazed at this verse because here, God is depicted as hiding. I thought, God hiding. against God, and God turns his face when we sin. If we take this a little deeper, maybe it is as the sinners leading us. I know if you sin, you need to confess your sin and be forgiven. No misunderstanding. Absolutely. But can we get our minds around the fact that sometimes we only go to God when we need him? You understand what I'm saying? You know, it's only when I only show up when I need something. I told you one that one time. I said, that's true of me, darling. If I come by, I'm going to need something from you. I'll ask to borrow something. Says, oh, you poor, pitiful, needy thing. Here you are again. Why don't you get a life? Now, I want to say something here that I'm going to say it and I know when I say it, someone's going to tell me, I'll get the feast next year. You'll say, you were saying we didn't need God in our personal life. You're wrong. Someone's going to misrepresent this, but if you listen, I say statements sometimes to help us break out of our states of denial. Just sort of shake you up here, but someone's trying to shake you up with this statement. But if you listen, I think you understand where I'm coming from as I explain this. Try to listen. Spiritual maturity is not about needing God more. It's about needing God less in the decisions that you make between right and wrong. Spiritual maturity is not about needing God more, it's about needing God less in the decisions that you make between right and wrong. And I'm not talking about not needing God more in prayer or Bible study or fellowship or throwing in the towel and saying, God, I don't need you. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about in the decisions that you make. Like, Lord, I'm thinking about going to the bathroom. What is your will? Absurd, but trust me, I have had people almost go to that extreme. Almost. Not quite. But almost an extreme of you thinking, what? What are you talking about? Or, Lord, and I've done this for myself. Lord, I think about buying a new vehicle for $1,000. What is your will? Now, I've consulted God's will on big issues, big financial things, but I've never got an answer. Most of the time the answer is yes. You know, if you leave it to the salesman, the answer will be yes. But he's never told me no, but should tell me something about what my motive is. And I'm not sure how he would tell you that. But I've done this, but I really think God sometimes will say, look, if he would speak to us, he would say, look, I'm not the one with the bills. You're the one with the bills. You figure out how much you're taking in. And how much you're paying out, and you make that decision. as your decision. And I really think you would probably say that. Now, let me give you an example of meeting God with us in the decisions that we make between right and wrong. Let's say you're at work, and the guys, your co-workers, come up to you and say, hey, it's not the Hooters to eat. And you say, Lord, I'm thinking about going to Hooters to eat. Now, I could have made that good food. There's only one problem. There's these half-naked women there that expose their busts and wear these tight little shorts. And I'm just wondering, Lord, what is your will? Now, that's one person. Let's take the other person over here who says, Lord, that doesn't even bother with that, who says, look, the last thing in the world I need, because I am a man, and men are stimulated visually of what they see sexually. That's how we're turned on. The last thing in the world I need is to go to Hooters and see these women there dressed seductively. I don't need that. And I'm not going.
Which one's closer to God? The one that has to consult God on the issue, or the one who has already decided in his heart what he's going to do? The second one is closer to God. Closer to God. So, I want us to understand this, that a lot of times, you know, our neediness, I've seen people become fanatical in their neediness, where everything has a meaning. You know, a lot of times this is one of the characteristics of every, you know, it's too much meaning interpreted in God's will. But I should have bought a new car, and this guy's flipping through the one ads, and he sees a big display, kind of display, in the ad, the paper ads. He said, it says, come and get it now. And he says, yeah, the Lord spoke to me. And I'm going to buy this new car. Sometimes we interpret too much in the meanings of things. So, in closing, you know, I love you, Lord, therefore I need you. That's freedom of choice. I love you, but it's not the other way around. Lord, I need you, I'm so desperate. I need you so badly. That's why I love you. Where is our hidden agenda for loving God? In his book, James Dobson, Love Must Be Taught, he says, if we come to God in a love relationship, it will be of our own free choice and through no coercion on his part. Not only must love be taught, it must be free as well. The love that we have for God must be free. It is our freedom of choice, freedom of relationship. So I love you, Lord, therefore I need you. It's important to say that in your marriage. I love you, therefore I need you. Not the other way around. We're out of a point of desperation. I need us. I can never live without you. One of the things I have found in my personal life is that it's hard to have any respect or high regard for a needy person. It's hard to have any respect or high regard for needy people. In fact, I'm not for sure if you can have much respect or high regard for needy people. Many of the needy of my culture are like the million of salmon and eggs that are wasted. They never reach maturity. They never reach maturity. So maybe our prayer should be, help me not to be so needy. Help us to need man less and love man more. Help us to need man less and to love man more. What I always fail to understand is, in this phrase of needing God's less that I mentioned earlier, that it is with those decisions that you make between right and wrong, is a sign of maturity, like the guy, the example that I gave you of the guy who already knew what was right in his mind and did it, that there is a sign of maturity. It's a reflection of a greater love that you have. It's a reflection of a greater love that you have for God when you're able to make those decisions. I think that was in 1 Corinthians 13, verse 11. Says, when I was a child, I spake as a child, I understood as a child, I thought as a child. But when I became a man, I put away childish things. When I was a child, I spake as a child, I understood as a child, I thought as a child. But when I became a man, I put away childish things. I remember when I was about age 12. I think that was the age of we were still celebrating Christmas. And I had a little Evel Knievel motorcycle that you, a little thing, and you zip it on, and you let it perform, and it would jerk things, and it ramped up. I think I was around 12, and one day, really, friend of mine sort of said, I told him what I wanted. He sort of got a kick out of it. He said, what do you want that for? And I wonder what he was saying without saying it is, David, you're almost 13. It's time to put the toys away. It's time for maturity. That hurt, you know. I sort of like to hold on to that childhood state. And James Upstairs, when I talk about their daughter, said that their daughter was slow in maturing. And that's okay. That's okay. Said that, but one day, said she boxed up all of her toys. There were little Barbies and Barbie cars, and she put all of her toys. And she boxed them up, and she set it in front of her son's room. Ryan, I think, is the name of her son, who was younger. All of her toys. I guess some he could play with. But she had a little note there. And her mother found it and said that when they found that note, they just both wept. Said Ryan said, I won't be needing these anymore. You can have them. It was a stage that was passed in maturity level. One that you can never go back to. You can look at your video images and pictures if you have. But once that stage, our children pass that stage, it's gone. And they mature on to the next level. There was a story in Reader's Digest many years ago about it's a father that he's in his garage, and his daughter or 7-year-old daughter comes out and says, Dad, get the bicycle off the wall there. She runs around in circles in the garage with her training wheels. And she says, Daddy, I want you to take the training wheels off. And he said, oh, wait a minute. He said, now, you know, this is the first time for you. 7 or 8, I forget the age, but. He said, you know, you could skin your knees, you could get hurt, you could skin your elbow. He said, no, I want you to take the training wheels off. So he took the training wheels off. And he walked along holding the seat as the daughter took off, holding the seat behind her. And then she got it as he leaned up. It lied a little bit. She went off. And he tells about a moment of it was a touching story, a moment of letting go as you watch your children mature to that next level. Stages of maturity that we all go through. And I often wonder, what is it like for God to let go for the many stages that we go through? It must be a little bit painful. As the stages of maturity, as he lets go, lets loose the grip, and we develop all to another state of maturity. Christian growth is measured by a lack of neediness. We're not as needy as we used to be. So I ask you, are you still using your training wheels? Or have you said to your father, I no longer need the training wheels?